Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunnigy. This week's guest is Vermont Democratic Senator Peter Welch, a member of the Senate Ag Committee who joins us to talk about the current state of the Farm Bill and the future of American agriculture after the election. But first, here's this week's headlines. A panel of experts says the next version of the nation's dietary guidelines should urge Americans to eat more plant-based foods and limit consumption of red or processed meats and refined grains. The Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee makes science-based recommendations to USDA and the Department of Health and Human Services for updating the dietary guidelines every 5 years. The committee's draft report recommends the new guidelines emphasize eating fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and seafood. The committee also decided there isn't enough data to draw conclusions about ultra-processed foods and health outcomes. More than 230,000 farms must file reports with the federal government disclosing their ownership by January 1st. The Corporate Transparency Act requires farms operated as LLCs or small businesses to file ownership reports to a Treasury Department agency called the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation, 230,000 farms are impacted. Senator Chuck Grassley says it should take farmers about 15 minutes to fill out the necessary paperwork. And finally, political action committees sponsored by farm organizations, agribusiness firms, and electric cooperatives have given nearly $27 million to congressional campaigns in the 2024 election. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson topped the list with about $158,000 in donations. The top House Democrat for donations was California's Jim Costa. Senator Amy Klobuchar led all Senate candidates with $101,000. She's expected to be the top Democrat on the Senate Ag Committee in the next session. The leading Republican in the Senate was Senator Deb Fischer. Meanwhile, we're less than 2 weeks away from the election. Both Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump are making some of their final campaign stops ahead of November 5th. We asked Vermont Senator Peter Welch what the future holds for American agriculture under Harris-Walz presidency.
Well, first of all, serving on the Ag Committee, that's the most bipartisan committee we have in Congress. So I think you'll see a continuation of that bipartisan approach, no matter who wins the election. But I do know that Tim Walz is the biggest friend of agriculture that we could have in an administration. He and I came into Congress together and served on the Ag Committee for a number of years, and he's all about rural America. And I think what you'll see is two things. Number one, a continuation of supporting our farmers. Second, and this is what I think is increasingly apparent, it's not just about the farmers in rural America. It's about the small businesses. It's about the manufacturers. It's about the small towns that are having real trouble getting wastewater treatment systems fixed, that community hospitals are under a lot of pressure. So you'll see, I believe, a continuation of a more holistic approach.
And I'd like to get your thoughts, too. There are a lot of undecided voters ahead of this election. What is your message to those voters who are unsure if Vice President Harris's ag priorities are what's best for them and their families?
The thing I emphasize is that the challenges we have in Vermont with the ups and downs of weather and how it's affected our dairy farmers, they're similar to some of the challenges that our cotton farmers, our corn farmers, our alfalfa farmers are having in other parts of the country. Also, the challenges we face here with, we've got to have broadband in rural communities. We have to have wastewater treatment facilities so small towns have a chance of expanding their population. You can go down the whole list. They're really, really similar whether you're in a red state or a blue state. And the big question for voters is who will be most committed to doing everything they possibly can to help strengthen those rural communities?
We'll be right back with more from Senator Peter Welch right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. When lawmakers return for lame duck, they'll have about a month to pass a farm bill before the end of the year. We asked Senator Peter Welch about the prospects of Congress passing a farm bill after the election, given nothing has passed the full House or come out of the Senate Ag Committee.
Well, it's tough times in Congress with what the gridlock is, so we know that. But what I also know from having worked on several farm bills is that the farm bill looks like it will never pass until it does. And the thing that we have going for us, and I'll speak about the Senate first, is that we have a very accomplished chair and bipartisan-oriented chair in Chair Stabenow. We also have a ranking member who's a very good person to work with, John Bozeman. And the two of them are having ongoing conversations, and my sense is they're making progress. The divisions within the debate about the farm bill are pretty classic in many ways. There's folks whose emphasis is on trying to raise commodity price supports for some of the field crops. There's others who want to make sure that we maintain our nutrition programs that are so essential to feeding America. Normally, we have a long fight about that and ultimately resolve it. The areas where there's a lot in common are some of the things that I just mentioned. You know, helping our rural communities with the various loan programs and grant programs for energy efficiency, which is all about saving our businesses and our farmers money, getting rural broadband built out, because you can't have a community that has any prospect of thriving in the modern economy without high-speed internet.
I do want to kind of piggyback off of what you were just saying there. You are the chair of the Senate Ag Committee's Rural Development and Energy Subcommittee. You mentioned rural broadband, but what are some of your farm bill priorities when it comes to those two topics?
It's about making rural America have the opportunity to be prosperous in a time when the costs for so many things are going up. So on the one hand, broadband is really essential, and that's something we've been championing in my subcommittee. I've been working with Senator Tuberville on that. You have to have high-speed internet. And I tell you, a lot of the urban folks, they just don't get it. If we don't have high-speed internet, our farmers are not going to be able to prosper. They're not going to be able to do that precision planting. They're not going to be able to get telehealth at a time when that's become even more important.
One final question before we wrap. You, along with Senators Tina Smith and Bernie Sanders, introduced a bill to help farmers access USDA emergency farm loans after natural disasters, and that was the day before Hurricane Helene made landfall. How important is it to get a bill like that passed, particularly following two storms that are leaving such generational damage behind?
It's absolutely essential that we get that done to help our farmers from Alabama to North Dakota. And here's why. The weather events are getting fast and furious. We know that. And I'll just give you an example of what happens. In Vermont, we had a flood, and it came literally right at harvest time. Okay? So these vegetable farmers who were counting on that crop, getting it to market, lost it. And under the current law with FEMA, the only amount of pay they could get was be the wholesale reimbursement for what, and most of these folks sell at farmer markets and get the retail price. Also, they could only get aid if they could prove what their revenue was last year as to the loss of the onion crop or the loss of the carrot crop. Well, you know what? We've got to simplify that so that basically they can just use last year's revenues as an indicator of what's likely to be their this year's revenues. We've got to make it user-friendly, and we've got to make it quick.
Senator Peter Welch, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, Lydia Johnson has a look at the country's drought conditions in this week's Map It Out.
Low precipitation and above average temperatures across the majority of the United States is leading to more widespread drought. As you can see on this map, white represents normal conditions, yellow areas show abnormally dry areas, and increasing variations of orange through red represent higher levels of drought. More than 45% of the continental U.S. is in various levels of drought, according to the most recent U.S. Drought Monitor. The country's Corn Belt is seeing widespread moderate drought. Soil moisture is depleting as fall fertilizer application begins and the winter season approaches. States across the high plains that produce wheat, sorghum, and corn have areas of moderate, severe, and even extreme drought as farmers continue the second half of harvest season. The central and southern plains in Oklahoma and Texas have areas of extreme drought that could affect winter wheat production. Looking ahead, NOAA scientists say a weak La Nina may develop before the winter season that could influence temperatures, precipitation, and snow across the country. Experts say if the La Nina develops, southern regions of the U.S. could be drier than average, while the northern tier of the U.S. would be wetter than average. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss any of the insights and analytics that AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You won't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel discussion is going to focus on the Farm Bill. Excited to be joined today by Jonathan Coppice with the University of Illinois and Joby Young with the American Farm Bureau Federation. Thank you both gentlemen for joining us today. And Jonathan, I want to start with you first. You know, when Congress comes back for lame duck, they have about a month to pass this Farm Bill. Lawmakers insist, though, that they can still do it. Is that realistic?
Well, it's going to be tough. I mean, I think they've got a very packed schedule with getting a full year appropriations bill, probably addressing any level of ad hoc disaster assistance. And then you got to try to squeeze a farm bill in there somewhere. And so I think to be realistic, we have to acknowledge that it is an extremely difficult undertaking for a very short amount of time post-election. But I don't want to, you know, hope springs eternal. I don't want to rule it out completely. There is a big push to get things done. And certainly where there is a will, there can be a way. But it's going to take a lot.
And Joby, I want to bring you into the discussion now, sir. You know, lawmakers have had a tough time finding funding in the Farm Bill for everything farm groups want. Is it realistic a deal could be reached before the end of the year? And is that a problem that could carry over into next year?
Well, I'd agree with Jonathan. It's a tough road ahead. But at least for me, I get paid to be optimistic and think about the possible and try to find what's possible, not what's probable. And so there are a lot of different heavy objects that need to be lined up to get to a farm bill this year in the lame duck. The funding, of course, is piece of that. A lot of those questions to be resolved, the politics, et cetera. So there are some challenges, but you know, there is an election here in a couple weeks, and that'll kind of scramble the decks. And there's a lot of different combinations that could come online, depending on how different, controls of the presidency and different chambers of Congress go. So we'll keep holding out for what's possible. And I would just say if there's a political will, Congress can do it. There's a lot of traffic in the pattern, as Jonathan had mentioned, of things that need to happen in the lame duck. But a modernized five-year farm bill is and should be a priority for these lawmakers.
And what are you hearing, Joby, from farmers across the country about their trust in Congress to get a bill passed, as well as the impact of a continuing resolution on their operations?
Sure. Well, farmers in the country have and remain frustrated, of course, that the farm bill process has taken the path that it has. And there was the original one-year extension. And then now there's, a lot of difficulty as we go forward over the next month or so. And so a lot of frustration out there, and that's a reflection of what you're seeing in farm country. We've had the high input prices and other things for a long time. We have the commodity prices that are moving the wrong direction. Other factors out there in the landscape that are bringing a lot of pressures into the ag economy. And it's a risky business. It's a business that has those risks, the weather risks, the global market risks, other things. And the Farm Bill provides that risk management, you know, and that's the big issue. And farmers need that certainty. They need those risk management programs, and they've shared that. So we're hearing that, of course. I think one good thing is that we're getting signals in recent weeks that a lot of lawmakers are hearing that, as farmers have shared that through various channels to their Congress, members of Congress that represent them. And you're seeing a lot more talk and movement, I think, with the right people.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now. Instead of waiting for a new technology, we are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. There's been talk of Congress passing some packages of emergency payments for farmers dealing with the downturn in commodity markets. We asked Joby Young with the American Farm Bureau Federation about the chances of that happening.
Our primary focus is getting that new modernized farm bill, but we also recognize and have heard from our members and farmers across the country about those immediate needs that need to be addressed. The timing here, if Congress passes a farm bill, there's still the implementation time that USDA has to have, and so there's a lag in a lot of the risk management programs and the other things coming online after a farm bill's passed. So those are, because of that situation, there are these immediate disaster needs and the market downturn needs that necessitate some of that sort of intermediate relief and support that farmers need to make sure they can make it through these tough times.
And Jonathan, I kind of want to piggyback off that, bring you back into the discussion here. You know, Hurricanes Helene and Milton leaving generational damage behind. Do you think more needs to be done in the farm bill to make sure programs meet the current safety net needs for farmers?
That has to be the priority for Congress. You've got to step in. That's just the kind of thing that I don't care how well-designed a policy is, that kind of damage and destruction is just incredibly difficult to address in a standing policy. So that's the kind of thing we typically see emergency relief for. I do worry a bit about this talk of an additional economic disaster assistance or economic assistance type legislation and how that impacts not just farmers, but costs, how that impacts the politics around getting a farm bill done, and how much it may complicate a whole lot of things. And I do think it is also a kind of frustrating reminder that the way we've designed some of these programs, that with the timing delays and the marketing year averages and all those things, does complicate sort of the quick reactionary the more timely and relevant set of issues that farmers face, like we're seeing with down prices right now.
And I would like to kind of get both of your guys' thoughts here on this last question. Joby, I'll start with you first, sir. Republicans have criticized the way that the Biden administration prorated disaster assistance to help smaller producers. Does Congress need to dictate more precisely how the money is distributed?
Well, it's not uncommon for there to be disagreements about how money's spent, how programs are designed. There's a certain amount of discretion that agencies will exercise when they implement different programs that Congress puts together. I think that there's a little bit of a new element that's sort of entered the landscape now with the Chevron decision. So we're going to see how all that plays out as we go forward. But at the end of the day, Congress can write, any package with the degree of specificity that they that they desire. And so they can certainly do that. What you hope for is to have agreement upon where the need is, have bipartisan agreement about putting these packages together so that ultimately these funds and the assistance can make its way to the folks that need it.
And your thoughts as well, Jonathan?
There are a variety of struggles that are not being addressed. And I think importantly, the different situation for farmers on the ground. You know, a farmer with a huge operation and many years of income and payments and everything else is in a very different situation than a young farmer, an early stage farmer. And I think we see that right now with prices going down, where these younger farmers are going to get hit harder and they're going to get hit first by this stuff. And so I think getting into the design of what the administration did is another set of questions, but I do think it raises this set of questions about, are we thinking about our policy in the current state of farming? How do we triage the needs of farmers at different levels, at different stages of their operation, and making sure, probably, you know, the one thing we can all agree on is we want success at the younger, early stage level. We want those individuals entering farming now to be able to farm for as long as they want. And if we're designing policies that do not address those needs and issues, you know, that's going to complicate their ability to succeed, particularly in these really tough stretches. So I think there's an interesting question that comes out of this. Again, I don't know, you know, without really analyzing, I don't know if the way USDA was thinking about it is the exact right way. What we really need is a sort of well worked out deliberative process to get a farm bill. We haven't seen that in this Congress. And, you know, back to your earlier point, the frustrations are real. I mean, we've seen 2 years of the 118th Congress and almost no progress around it, and certainly nothing that sort of addresses what we keep seeing these needs pop up, whether it's weather disasters, challenges with crop prices, and so forth. So I guess there's a call in this somewhere. If Congress doesn't get the farm bill done in this lame duck, then maybe to step back and start over and really then dig into these issues and work it through a sort of regular order process that sorts a lot of this out.
Certainly a lot to be paying attention to with the farm bill here as we move into lame duck. Only time will tell if lawmakers will be able to get something passed before the end of the year. Jonathan, Joby, thank you both for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Lydia Johnson has more on USDA NRCS staffing in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Finding and retaining employees has been a longstanding challenge for the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. However, staffing up became especially important after USDA received $19.5 billion in conservation program funding from the Inflation Reduction Act. The extra people are needed to help farmers plan and implement conservation practices. As you can see on this chart, NRCS staffing reached a 10-year low in 2019, but now it's on the rise. The agency hit its 623-person hiring goal during fiscal 2023 and provided $2 billion in overall conservation program funding, including over $390 million from the Inflation Reduction Act. Agency officials say they need approximately 14,000 employees to handle the additional demands for assistance with conservation practices. NRCS says the goal is to hire 1,600 people this year, 1,200 next year, and 1,100 in 2026. Read more about NRCS staffing and NOAWIC series on our website. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. USDA's monthly agricultural prices report comes out Thursday. Next week is the World Food Prize's Borlaug Dialogue. My colleague Lydia Johnson will bring you a special show from the event with interviews including this year's laureate winner. And Election Day is less than 2 weeks away on November 5th. Early voting is open in some states. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.